I managed to win that in the most lucky fashion. And I do remember that it was so unexpected that I won that, like, Kariakin came to me.
A kid, a student at a hackathon, decided to create an app that basically connects with your AI glasses, transmits live the moves.
So let's just take the top 100 and see the amount that, for example, I know were banned from one chess site or another, or were caught over the board.
Basically, the best players in the world were punished for accepting bribes, match fixing, and cheating. I think half of the GMs on this list were completely banned and stripped of their titles. Boom. Welcome back, everybody, to another C-Squared podcast episode. Fabi, the Wimbledon of Chess is coming up in just a couple of days after the recording of this episode, probably tomorrow. I think we're going to release this tomorrow. So, yeah, you're in Tata Steel. You're in Vijfontein right now. The Netherlands, the Wimbledon of Chess is upon us. And it's a very exciting tournament, very long tournament. I think we've done the math on how much time you've spent in playing this tournament, and it was quite impressive. But your first thoughts about this year's event?
Yeah, it's one of the most famous events. I guess the longest running closed event that's still going on. A lot of events. You know, traditional events of the past have disappeared, like, let's say, Linares. A lot of new events have shown up, but the Vijfontein tournament, which is now sponsored by Tata Steel, the Tata Group, but was sponsored by other companies in the past, has remained around. And yeah, it's a very long tournament, as you said. It's 13 rounds long. 14 players, single round robin with 3 rest days. So about as long as you get besides the candidates tournament, which is 14 rounds with rest days as well. And it's also very strong. Okay, it doesn't have Magnus this year. He has said that he doesn't really enjoy classical as much as he used to. And this is a very classical tournament. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. a really long time control. It's 100 minutes for the first 40 moves, followed by 50 minutes with 30-second increment from the start, which is very long. Usually we play, let's say, 90 minutes plus 30 minutes. So here we have an extra half an hour per side added compared to that time control. And
is an elitist's wet dream. Is a chess purist's wet dream.
In some ways it is. But they have a bit of a difference in that they invite some of the kind of less known guys, right?
Yes.
But it's very classical. So yeah, if you're one of those like chess purists, then this is what people enjoy. But if for it to be totally elitist, it would have to have like Magnus, Hikaru, and nobody under 2750, right?
Yeah.
Then it would be pure elitist.
Yeah. I guess from a format, from the length of the event, it seems like one of the least touched elite level events in the last, I don't know, 20 years, right? As you just mentioned, a lot of them disappeared. A lot of them, their formats got distorted to kind of lean towards short time controls. This one, not so much. It's a long one.
Yeah, it's pretty much unchanged, as you said. For a long time, maybe some minor changes here and there. I think the most major change that I've seen throughout my years playing here is the first time I played in 2008. There were 3 groups, and it was A, B, and C. A group was the top one, and I played in the C group when I was 15 years old, and then we were kind of roped off. So the B and A groups, they had their own section. The C group. The little guys, we were separated from them. I don't think they would have had an issue with us like wandering past the ropes to look, but it did feel like we were a little bit, you know, like we're
not quite
there yet. Yeah, well, it was mostly kids. Like, I mean, I was 15. Negi was probably younger than me, around 14, 15. he was one of the top seeds. Then you had when I played, Irina Krush was playing. There were a bunch of like strong women players, and then it was a lot of young players. And then some of the more established guys were like, who was playing? Van der Veel. I mean, mm-hmm. guys like that, like the older Dutch generation, a bunch of guys like that were playing. Then when I played the B group,
maybe Daniel
Stelwagen. No, it was C group. Like for guys like Stelwagen, who were like the young Dutch players at the time, who were trying to break to the top of Dutch chess. Like, I guess Stelwagen is probably 1987 or 88.
Yep.
He would have been a bit too strong, I guess, for the C group at that time. Maybe he was playing the B group. The next year I played the B group in 2009, and that was really strong. That was Nigel was playing, Tiviakov, Kazimzhanov, like a lot of guys who were high 2600s. Paco Vallejo, Yefimenko, I think, like a lot of guys who are high 2600s. And I managed to win that in the most lucky fashion. And I do remember that it was so unexpected that I won, that like Karjakin came to me. And like, I think he won the A group. So he was in a very good mood. And he came to me and he was like, I can't believe that you won that, because I won from a dead loss position against Nigel. And a draw would not have been enough. And if Nigel won, he would have won the tournament. But I somehow came back from, like, he blundered twice. First, I losing to a draw, and then I was winning. And even though I had not been leading the tournament at a single point throughout the entire tournament, I won the event.
That's crazy. But also, what strikes me as quite odd is the fact that Karjakin was already a little bit ahead of yourself, even though you guys are fairly the same age, I guess, or
well, he's
maybe
2 years older.
Oh, 2 years. I thought he's only 1 year older. So I guess yeah, so there was a little bit of a discrepancy, even in rating.
Oh, for sure. He was much stronger. When I won the B group, I was 16. And I was probably around 26, 60, 70. I would say 26, 70. Karjakin would have been around 27, 20 to 30 at that time. And it was a bit of a surprise that he won the tournament. He wasn't a favorite.
Got it.
But of course, I mean, 27, 20 to 30 in 2009, that was definitely a top 20 player, maybe top 15.
Let's say he was already somewhat established. You were just on the come up.
Yeah, he had like broken through. I was still struggling. I only really broke through fully in, I would say, between 2011 and 2012. That's when I went from like low 2700s to 2780 or so. But in 2009, I was still like, in 2010, that was because the winner of the C group qualified to B, the winner of the B qualified to A. So I qualified in 2010. And I think I was 2675 when I played 2010. And I was considered a major underdog. So to give an idea of who I was playing in 2010, Magnus was among the top seeds, but he was still very young. Vichy, Peter Lako, Veselin Topalov, Vladimir Kramnik. I'm not sure if Veselin played in 2010. Maybe he did, but Vladimir Kramnik, Boris Gelfand, these were the guys who were like the best players. Ivanchuk, and so on and so forth. Like you could say the previous generation before mine, or maybe even two chess generations, because I would kind of separate it as the guys who were born in the 70s who got very strong. Although I think Vichy was born 1969. But yeah, this kind of generation, you know, which includes maybe Kremnik's a bit younger, Vichy's a bit older, Ivanchuk around Vichy's age, but they were more or less like the top players for a very long time. And then there were the guys who were young at that period, which was like early 80s they were born, like Levon Aronian, Ruslan Ponomaryov, Bakro, Grishuk, could probably like rattle off a bunch of other names. And then Hikaru and like Mamadiarov, Rajabo from the late 80s. And then I would consider my generation, which includes Magnus, Karjakin, Maxim, Jan Nepomniachtchi, Ding, Wesley, myself, and so on, Anish. And So in 2010, I was still, that was my first time playing the A group. I scored minus three. I think the winner, maybe a shared winner, was Magnus. But there was one very bright moment in this tournament, which is that although I did struggle throughout the tournament, I played Magnus with black in the last round. And he definitely wanted to beat me because I was a huge underdog against him. But I was very, very, and I don't know if it was, maybe it was my first time playing against him. And I was very close to winning that game with the black pieces. I pressed him the entire game. It was overall a well-played game. In the end game, at some point, I made basically one mistake, which turned a winning knight end game into a draw. But it wasn't an easy conversion task, and it was a high-quality game overall. That was my first time playing him. And of course, we played a million times after that. At some point, it no longer felt like he was the older player, you know, because we kind of both were at the top. But at that time, he was at the top and I wasn't, and he did feel like the older player who I was trying to catch up to. And so that was a bright moment in the tournament.
Yeah, no, definitely a tournament with a rich history. And obviously the C, B groups were kind of legendary. I know Eric Hansen, when we used to go to university, I think after I graduated, he got into one of these, I believe it was the B group. So it always feels for whoever is getting those type of invitations like a big opportunity. A big opportunity to do well, to make a name for yourself. And obviously, if you win it, right now you only have two groups. If you win the B group, you're making it to the A group, and that means you're playing, you know, the best chess players on the planet in the next year. So, yeah, it's a huge opportunity for, let's say, the underdog. But it's also filled with a bunch of killers. You're there, Gukesh is there. The world champion, the first classical event, the first event for Gukesh Weiyi, who has done quite well in recent times. So definitely a player to watch.
He won last year.
Did he? Was he the? Yeah, he won it.
Weiyi won after a four-way tie, which ended in a playoff.
He beat Gukesh, right?
Noderbeck. He beat Noderbeck.
I'm pretty sure he beat Gukesh. Gukesh beat Anish in the semifinals. Of the tiebreaks, and then Weiyi beat Noderbeck in the semifinals, and then they met in the finals.
You're probably right. I don't have a clear memory of it.
But yeah, yes, you're probably right. It was these four players, whichever.
No, yeah, it was definitely the four players, yeah. And Weiyi was definitely the winner. He definitely either beat Gukesh or Noderbeck, but you're probably right that he beat Gukesh. I can just confirm, although I trust you on this one.
I remember Gukesh beating Anish. I think this is something I remember vividly, but again, everything is kind of a blur.
Yeah. No, you're right. Weiyi beat Gukesh in two games. He won in the last game. And Noderbeck lost to Weiyi, and yeah.
You can't take it because it's pinned! King f5, bishop e6, and that's the clincher! That's the clincher!
Oh, and you see it on Gukesh. He is, he's broken. And he shakes Weiyi's hand. Weiyi is the 2024 Tata Steel Masters Champion.
Yeah, so you get those guys. You get the young guns. Noderbeck, Prague, Vincent Keimer, Van Forest, I guess. You could call him established, even though right now he's a little bit under 2,700. Still a player that has won this event in previous years.
He's not among the younger players.
Not anymore, right? I mean, that's a sad thing to say because...
He's young, of course.
That's a cruel thing to say because he's, what, 22, 23, 24, something like that?
Yeah, either 24, 40, or 25.
He's young from anybody else's standards, but from the standards of modern chess, it feels like he's already a little bit more established. Now, obviously, you have Anish, Hare Krishna, who replaces Vidit. My guess is because Vidit just got married. Congratulations to Vidit. That's just a guess, educated guess. Might be wrong. Then you have Fedosev, Serrana, Mendonca, and Arjun. How could I forget Arjun? I think I said Max Warmerdon, and Yeah, it's quite a field. It feels like, you know, maybe in previous years you had one or two players that it felt like you should be significantly a favorite against. Maybe you could spot one or two in this one, but it feels like a very, very elite lineup.
Yeah, it's really strong. No, I mean, it's totally new, of course. Definitely the general kind of players I'm playing against has changed drastically. If I just look at the lineup, of course, there are a lot of guys that I'm familiar with. You know, Gukesh, I've played a lot. Arjun played a little bit against him. Noderbeck played a lot. Prague, we've played in the candidates. You know, Anish is there. He's obviously played a million games. But there are not really many of the guys who I used to play a ton against. Magnus is not here. Hikaru is not here. Maxime, Levon, Karjakin, who obviously, you know, Karjakin has not been playing chess for a while. But a lot of the guys who I used to play, Mamadiarov, I mean, I can just go on and on. A lot of the guys, not to speak of the older, even of the older generation, like Vichy, Kramnik, and so on, I simply don't really play them. So it's mostly either guys in their early 20s or like Arjun, like Vincent, or their late teenage years, like Prague, Gukesh. You know, there's only three players, I think, over the age of 30. It's Pentala, and myself, and Anish.
Yeah.
So I'm the second oldest player in the tournament. Which I'm still not the oldest player in a tournament. Have I played a tournament where I'm the oldest player? I'm trying to think.
That's a good question, actually. I don't think you have.
I don't think so, but it's really gotten close. Like, you know, there's always one guy who saves me. But if Vidit were playing into Pentala, I would be the oldest player in the tournament.
No, for sure. For sure. No.
And so it was very close. You know, Hari is saving me.
Hari saving you, yeah. Actually,
it's kind of funny because I'm, you know, when I spoke about like the previous generation who were like top players, like if we go back, you know, 12 years or so, we're talking about players who were in their 40s, right? And there was a bunch of them who were playing and actively the best players, some of the best players in the world, like Vichy and Topalov and so on. But now you have a few guys in their 30s, most in early 30s. Nobody really close to 40, and a lot of guys who are between the ages of 18 and 22, I guess. I'm not exactly sure how old Fedosev is, but I think he's probably in his mid to late 20s.
I think he's 30. I think he already hit 30.
Oh, is he?
I believe so. At least that 29. Was my impression.
29. Okay.
29. So he hasn't even hit 30.
Yeah, no, I for some reason I thought he was born like 98, but he's born 95, which also makes sense. I mean, he's been around for a long time. If we even go back like 5 years, he was like 2760. So he was a top player even quite a few years ago.
I mean, he tied for the world championship, right? The Rapid World Championship, and then lost against Vichy.
Sure. Yeah. No, I'm talking about I'm talking about classical mostly, but yeah, Rapid, of course.
He's been around as an elite guy for a while. Yeah, I know. The generations are blending together.
It's definitely a shift.
Yeah.
It's a big shift. Part of it is because my generation, they don't really seem to like classical chess too much. Also, no, like really. I mean, Magnus and Hikaru. You know, they're kind of not playing too much classical. They play a bit here and there, but very, very sporadically.
I think it's mostly a business decision. Yeah, very much a business decision. Obviously, supported
is it, also or yeah, maybe pleasure as well. Like
their priorities.
They don't really enjoy it.
Yeah,
and like Ding is not playing anything. I mean, you know, he plays a world championship now and then, and then kind of chills the rest of the time. Which is a good strategy. I mean, don't
get me
wrong.
Be careful what you say. Did you see that? Did you see the lady that asked Ding about the Ding chilling meme and got sacked by the German Federation?
No, I didn't.
So there was this story that this lady journalist in Singapore, he asked Ding about the Ding Chilling meme, and then apparently she got sacked.
I've seen a lot of Ding Chilling memes, and so my question for Ding is if you have seen any of them and what do you think about them?
By, I want to say, the German Federation when she came back, and it was kind of like...
For asking a question?
For asking a question, yeah, just because supposedly was not professional, which seems a little bit over a far-fetched decision by the German Federation. And by a little bit, I mean a lot, but yeah.
I don't know much about the story, so I won't really comment on it.
Yeah, no. Again, just to stay with this one, obviously, big event and a historical event. I just scrolled today through Anish's Twitter, and he posted this photo of a plaque with all the names of the winners. And it goes all the way to like 1938. Mm-hmm. You see Max Oewe, some crazy names that you don't really hear about much nowadays. Lajos Portis, Larsen, Walter Brown. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. Gary has won it quite a few times. And have won it, obviously.
I won it only once.
Only once, 2020. Hmm.
But I think it was one of the most convincing wins of the tournament. I won it with two rounds to spare, maybe.
I remember that, yeah.
With a two-point margin for sure over Magnus. Magnus was second place. It's actually funny because like I've had some of my best performances. Somehow Magnus is still getting second place, even though I'm like I've only had it twice that I've kind of really dominated a tournament with Magnus in it. It's the Singfield Cup and Tata 2020. And I was very lucky to get that score because I was losing against Vichy and somehow won the game. Just like absolute miracle.
I remember that. But, and that's when the whole tournament somewhat shifted in your favor. You started winning game
without
after game.
That, it was a different story. But Magnus did get clear second with 8 points. And I won with 10 out of 13, which is probably one of my best performances by quite a bit over, like if you go by performance after the Singfield Cup 2014. And yeah, that's definitely a tournament I have very good memories over.
How are you feeling right now going into this one? Energy-wise, are you feeling ready?
I'm pretty good. You know, I haven't played a closed tournament in quite a while. The U.S. Championship was the last one I played, the last closed tournament. I mean, I played the Rapid and Blitz. I played all these open events, which were a bit of a rush, you know, a bit of a scramble. Not exactly clean stuff in terms of, like, my games, my results, and my emotions. You know, I was losing a bunch of bad games, playing a bunch of bad games, but just trying to get the necessary score, which did work out in the end. So I don't know how to entirely feel, you know, it's been a while, but for a lot of players, like Gukesh hasn't played since the World Championship. That's a long time. I mean, it might feel kind of fresh, the World Championship, but that's still several months that he hasn't played a single competitive game, not even Rapid or Blitz. And a lot of the other guys, like, they've had breaks. Okay, a lot of people played the World Rapid and Blitz, but if you look at the last classical games I don't know, Arjun, like, when was his last classical event? Probably Qatar. So it's also been quite a while, and that's an open tournament.
Basically the same as you, right? You guys played that
If you look at Noderbeck, I don't remember the last classical event he played. I mean, okay,
he played
Qatar,
in Qatar as well. Yeah,
Qatar as well. So the end of the year is a bit more Rapid and Blitz oriented, I guess. And I don't know how people will be feeling. Maybe there will be some adjustment, especially with this time control, which is so long as well. But we'll see. It's a long event. I can tell you my starting pairing. I drew the number 10 seed, and I'm playing against Wei Yi with the black pieces in the first round.
Okay. And the defending
champion.
I believe
I'm playing Alexei Sorana in the second round with the white pieces. But yeah, Wei Yi, defending champion. I didn't check my pairings besides that. I can tell you one interesting fact. There is a game, Gukesh versus Anish. Gukesh with the white pieces in the first round. But because of a important commitment, Gukesh is arriving on Saturday, which is the day of the first round.
So he's arriving, I guess,
in the morning.
They're actually delaying that, or is he going to play?
No, he's playing.
He's playing. Oh, wow.
He's playing the first round after arriving in the morning. I guess, I don't know if there's a direct flight. I mean, if he's coming from like New Delhi, I guess there's a direct flight or connection.
Who has white again?
He has white. Yeah, of course. I mean, Gukesh can opt to play it very safe and probably a smart decision, just like try to make a quick draw in the first round considering the schedule.
That's what I would do.
But also very interesting to see what happens, because he's not exactly known for making quick draws. So it's a bit scary to come off a flight and then play
a game from India, top, right?
Yeah, with the time difference and everything.
That's pretty significant.
But yeah, I've never done that, arrived the day of to play a classical game, because you might play a six-hour game too. It's just a funny bit of trivia. I mean, it's not actually, it's most likely not going to be super relevant. Like, you might comfortably bet on a draw as well in that game.
Yeah. Did you see the new promo with Gukesh and Vishy?
I did, because Anish said it was great. And so I had to see
it. I have to say, it was pretty funny.
But it's also like a lot of kind of Indian humor. Like, I mean, also a lot of the language I didn't understand.
Yes.
See, Gukesh, to connect with today's kids, I need your help with all this Gen Z lingo, like kabaddi and all.
It's kibbidi.
Scooby-Doo?
I mean, I would say just the general imagery of it, the visuals of it. Gukesh looking like this Indian gangster with golden glasses and a golden chain and getting tattooed, and Vishy looking like a up-and-coming schoolboy of some sort. I mean, the imagery was pretty funny.
You know, like, I think it was three and a bit years ago when I was doing commentary with Danny and Robert, and Danny convinced us to do the most ridiculous things, the most ridiculous skits. And it's not like we were paid extra to do them. He just convinced us. And what, I mean, some of his ideas were, you know, why don't you tell us bedtime stories and then tuck us into bed, things like that, which I don't even know where he came up with that. And people were surprised I did that. But I think it's far more surprising to see Vishy doing that.
Yes.
Especially knowing Vishy. He's generally pretty serious. And I mean, not that he's doesn't have a sense of humor, of course he does, but generally pretty serious. And I would not have expected to see him doing a pretty silly ad.
Yeah.
At least I feel better. Mine were not, they were ridiculous, but other players are also willing to do it.
Difference is that he probably got paid for it.
I didn't get that part.
There's obviously a non-zero chance that he didn't get paid, but I would bet if I were a betting man that he got paid for it.
I would also assume so, yeah.
quite funny. Yeah, so that happened. What else happened? I remember what happened. We really need to speak about this one, because we've been speaking about it for so long, and we've, in fact, I don't want to say we were the first ones that kind of discussed this potential situation, but among the first ones. I remember we were discussing this even like last year at Superbet, when Meta, Facebook, and Ray-Ban came up with the glasses, the AI glasses, and now it happened. It finally happened. A kid, a student, at a hackathon, decided to create an app that basically connects with your AI glasses, transmits live the moves. I believe it was on Instagram Live or something like that, and has a built-in app that manages to scan the board understand where the pieces stand, transmit that to Stockfish, get the best move, and basically tell you the best move. I believe right now is via audio in your ears, but my guess is very soon, if not already, we have that. It could be just simply shown on the AI glasses. So it would be undetectable, unless you obviously have, you know, the cheating, anti-cheating mechanisms in place.
These glasses make you the best chess player in the world.
Oh, sh**.
And Eddie's going to use them to win in an IRL match.
All you need to do is put the glasses on and we use AI to analyze the pieces on the board. Plug that into Stockfish and the most optimal move is read aloud through the speakers on the headphone.
So things are evolving fast. Over the board chess is kind of getting a hint of what online chess has been dealing with for a very long time. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm not sure why this is something we should be excited about. And also, I'm not sure...
Oh, I'm not excited. This is something I'm not sure I'm we should excited about it.
Assume hasn't already happened. And yeah, I've already said, like, as much as people want to downplay it, cheating is not only a serious issue, but will probably continue to be, or perhaps become a more serious issue. And the more serious it becomes, it also... maybe that the less obvious it becomes. And you may come to a point where, like, I don't know how to protect the integrity of the game, but it will take some very tough measures. But yeah, like AI glasses were a pretty obvious first candidate for like easy ways to cheat.
Luckily, I do think that they're detectable if you have the anti-cheating measures, but this only can be applied to over the board.
Yeah, to
like
over
if
the
you
board.
Actually do I'm, it online yeah. with glasses, zero chance
oh,
sure. to catch it. That's it. Game over.
I mean, the thing is, like, people really just downplay it so much. I mean, just for, like, the most basic... Here's the thing. I think people assume that, like, maybe the cheating rate is, I don't know, like, 5% do it, 2% do it, or... 5% have done it. But there's a few, I think, assumptions we can make and a few, like, very, I mean, undeniable statistical things we can kind of lay out. One is that it's probably not 1 or 3% or 5%. Just to, like, give you a kind of, I mean, this is obviously not completely watertight, but I think this is very significant. Like, let's just take the top 100 players in the world in classical rating. And we don't know how many exactly were banned, right? For cheating.
We don't.
Some were. But we do know some who were banned.
We do.
So let's just take the top 100 and see the amount that, for example, I know were banned from one chess site or another, or were caught over the board, which obviously caught over the board is a much smaller number. So I'm not going to say any names, but I'll just give you a number of a number that I know 100% is either that or more. Like, it's at the very minimum, it's that. So let me count. From the top.
Ta 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 ta. Drum roll. Ta 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 ta.
One.
We have quite a few,
two,
most likely. It's a sad situation. It's an alarming situation. And
three.
I've seen
four.
I've seen people.
Five.
Minimize the effect. Keep going with the counting.
Six.
Yes.
Seven. Two, two. Eight.
Ooh.
Nine.
Ooh.
Wait. Two. Ten.
Ouch.
11.
It's 11. High. It's high. Let's leave it at 11.
I know have been from one or another platform or over the board. Now, I don't know all who have. It could be that I know all. It could be that it's just 11. But I cannot, of course, assume that there's not more. But so that's 11%. So what is the perhaps false positive rate? Now, I mean, what would you assume? It's either that they get
I don't believe in false positives too much.
Yeah, maybe they just get it right all the time.
I would say 0.5% false positives. I don't think there's more than that.
If we're being absolutely generous, one of these 11 maybe was falsely banned. Probably not. But let's just assume that maybe there's a chance. Let's just say it's 10%. Now, what do you think is the likelihood? Are there more? Is there a higher percentage of cheating going on as we go lower in rating, or is there a higher percentage as we go higher in rating?
As we just go lower in rating.
Okay, that's your intuitive percentage. Assumption. We can only assume on this one.
That's a guess, educated guess, intuitive.
They're a reasonable assumption. That's a reasonable assumption also because if you look at all the players that chess.com bans in a month, they might not give the names, but they give the titles. They'll say like 0 GMs, 2 IMs, 7 FMs, 10 CMs, so
exactly.
On and so forth.
Yeah.
Which of course is logical also because there are more FMs than GMs. So
percentage wise, it might be less. Yes. Or it might be somewhere around there.
But it's also very logical that the people with the most to lose might be a bit more cautious. So if, let's say, 10% of the top 100 have been caught, and we assume that they've caught everyone who has ever cheated among the top 100, which are also like very generous assumptions to make, then we can either just put that 10% across the board. We could also maybe reasonably assume that it goes higher as we go lower, and then we're kind of just guessing. But certainly, like, random title Tuesday has anywhere between usually 500 and 800 players. Sometimes it might have more. Sometimes it may have a bit less. But you might, I mean, I saw recently one with 900 players. Now, assuming that 10% of those players have at some point shown a willingness to cheat and been caught, that means that you may have between 50 and 90 players among that pool. And now we can make a few assumptions. One we can make is that all the people who have ever cheated and been caught will never cheat again, right?
Sure.
It's a possible assumption.
Sure.
To make.
Why not?
It's possible. It's very generous.
Yeah.
But it's possible. The other assumption we can make is that chess.com caught all, or whatever website, caught all the cheaters. They have not missed a single one. That's a very unreasonable assumption, I think, because they definitely take time to catch people, and they definitely don't have a 100% foolproof method. Like, there's no way that they both have no false positives and also catch everyone. That would be too perfect a system. So we can probably assume that there are some people who have cheated who have gone undetected. And the other thing is that we can assume, like, the only way to assume there aren't like maybe 50 to 80 or whatever players who are willing to cheat in a single title Tuesday is to assume that after chess.com catches someone cheating, that they both never cheat again after they're re-released into the general pool of players, and also that new players don't have a temptation to cheat. So basically, they've caught all the people willing to cheat, and they're just eliminated. Like imagine a society where you catch all the thieves, and then everyone's like, okay, I'll never steal again, because obviously you can catch thieves. So that would be basically the assumption. It seems entirely like it's just fantasy, right? So then I play with the assumption that I'm playing an 11-round event and there are maybe 50 to 80 people in this tournament who I may play against who are willing to cheat against me. That's assuming that there aren't like maybe 20 more who are completely undetected by their anti. So why is it unreasonable for me to say, or like to say that I may play among my the 11 games, like one, maybe two people who are willing to cheat, and maybe it's for a few moves, I'll never know. So just like if we go by the numbers, being extremely charitable, it's still a massive problem. That's being extremely charitable. That's assuming that they've caught everyone and they don't have like maybe, like if they only catch half, then now we're adding like a bunch of like maybe 100 people to Title Tuesday now. And it soon gets to the point that it's like completely overrun.
Yeah, so it's really a huge problem. And I mean, to be honest, we've tried to find solutions and we've kind of discussed this at length so many times. I think probably under wraps, things are happening and we might not know it. Perhaps anti-cheating methods are improving, hopefully, especially online. Over the board, over the board, it's all about the resources, right? The resources.
I also want to give them credit. Yeah, it is about resources. And I want to give them a credit because I think that they are releasing something which will perhaps help enormously, which is that I know that some players have already been asked to do this, and they may roll it out for everyone at some point.
The Proctor, right?
Yeah, which is that they have the software, which I don't really know too much about it. I've just heard about it. But you basically go in, and you're on kind of camera. And also, like, it has access maybe to your processes and so on your computer. And then maybe they can have AI that will, like...
But now these...
Like, this automatically is a huge problem, check eye movements and things like that. I don't know exactly. But it's definitely a big step in the right direction. So I'm not trying to say all this to be hypercritical. It's just that if you ignore the problem, it only gets worse.
But I feel this whole situation with the glasses, every angle I've seen, it's only based on what's going to happen to over-the-board chess. But I feel this... AI glasses are much worse for online chess because at that point you're going to have proctors in the room with every single player playing every Title Tuesday every week, which is impossible. Obviously, no company is going to have those type of resources. So something has to happen in terms of the format at that point. Like, who are you going to let into the tournament? Because again, you cannot see it. You can incorporate two cameras. You can ask the players to have two cameras. You're not going to be able to see anything on those cameras. There's glasses. Okay, sure, the Ray-Bans right now, you can still see the camera, but there's AI glasses that I'm sure are available. I'm seeing ads all the time on Instagram and whatnot. You cannot really understand what you're looking at. They look just like normal glasses. You cannot spot their cameras. You cannot spot their screen inside of the lenses. You cannot spot anything. So if you don't have somebody to check them with some sort of a scanner, some sort of an electronic scanner, you stand no chance to stop those players from cheating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also don't think live proctors would help with that because they would need to have
equipment. Electronic scanners. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you're not going to send that out 100 live proctors all with equipment.
It's impossible. Just, impossible.
Yeah.
No way. I mean, it's really bad for online chess.
It's a really serious issue. I don't really know what the solution is because you could like make it more restrictive in terms of who's joining. I don't know, but that's also very elitist. Exactly. So it's not really a solution. And then you'd also have to assume that like top players are entirely ethical and not ready to cheat, which I don't know why we have that assumption. Not to say that I have any reason to mistrust my colleagues, but we should probably treat them the same way as everyone else, which is that there's a possibility that any singular player is willing to. I mean, it's a sort of ethical question, which we can't assume everyone is honest. We can't assume everyone is dishonest. And we definitely can't assume someone is more honest because they're 2800 rather than 2730 or 2730 rather than 2660. Like, maybe you could personally think that, but definitely as an organization, you can't make that assumption.
Yeah.
So yeah, AI glasses or other things, like, I mean, I think we've like mostly ignored the problem because there isn't an easy solution. And because it doesn't really change things so much for, like, you know, it all looks normal to the outside public. They think nothing's wrong is going on. The players are mostly quiet because most get paid reasonably. And, you know, if you are too loud about it anyway, it's not like it helps you. And usually you get backlash. And the players who are cheating, whoever they may be, are very happy. The sponsors don't really know anything. They're not really involved in chess, so it's all the same to them. So everyone goes about, and behind the scenes, as you know, there's just enormous discussion.
Yeah,
just like it's absolutely, yeah, it's always the topic of discussion. And as much as like the maybe outside public thinks that cheating isn't an issue, among like every grandmaster I've ever talked to, it's just the severity, their assumption of the severity ranges from like most people are cheating to a significant portion are cheating. So it's, I mean, obviously also very often trends into paranoia, but you can't really avoid paranoia when you have an issue of which the scale is unclear, but nothing is really being done. It just, everyone will trend into paranoia.
Yeah, at some point. I feel it's one of those instances, especially where at the moment where people have more incentive to not necessarily close an eye to it, but basically accept the fact that they don't control the situation. Like, you as a player don't really have any control over the situation, who you're going to face,
whether you're going to
face a cheater or not. And you sort of have to come to the realization that that's just the nature of it right now. And you have to trust chess.com, FIDE, whoever is, you know, policing this type of things. You have to trust that they're going to have the best judgment and they're going to try to catch them. And there's going to have to be a combination of factors of how they catch them, whether it's moves, whether it's, you know, AI analyzing their games and their moves. And at that point, you know, you don't have 100% certainty, so you have to defend against, you know, potential lawsuits and stuff like that. But yeah, it's invisible. It's an invisible problem, and it's much more invisible than, you know, in other sports where, let's say, for example, in jiu-jitsu, first of all, steroids are allowed, so it's not even a problem in jiu-jitsu. But in other sports, obviously.
Yeah, the issue in chess is that you can't, because it's not like steroids, it's not enhancing, it's just changing. It's like,
yeah,
if I use a computer, it's probably better if I just like press the space bar and make the computer moves rather than use my own input in any way. I mean, there used to be like advanced chess, but I think right now advanced chess would just be pressing the space bar and anyone could do it. There is no like human input anymore. There's only human input in terms of like analysis that maybe what would be most useful for a human against another human. If it's just like two computers, then there's no, the only like art, if you want to call it that, in cheating is not getting caught, I guess.
To not get caught, yeah. Yeah. To make some stupid moves occasionally.
Which is probably pretty easy, because again, if you look at blitz games, like today I played a bunch of games over the board against Grigori, my second. I mean, it's just major blunders at some point, you know, it usually goes into major blunders. So it's not like you have to be super subtle. And you probably don't even have to do a very, very accurate blunder check. You just have to like, at some point, exploit the last blunder some of the time, and you probably increase your results massively. And and probably undetectably as well. So from the moves, you just can't, like, there's nothing to talk about. I wouldn't even like talk about the moves if I'm suspecting cheating. People always say, well, what from the moves? It's like, oh, it looks like a natural game. It doesn't matter. I mean, you cannot draw any conclusions from the moves. You can maybe like form a personal opinion, but it will be subjective. So it's probably not worth talking about even from that point of view. And I would assume that human intuition on this may be very often wrong. And also, you'll probably be biased by the player and your personal opinion about them, whether their rating or even like your opinion of them as a friend, maybe. There will be a lot of biases in terms of that. So yeah, will AI be able to detect better than a human? I don't know. Hopefully, I mean, like, hopefully we can go in that direction that AI detection will be. But again, I have a feeling that there's always this backlash. It's like, it's a very common trend, you know, someone is closed by, let's say, chess.com, and then they make a public appeal. And then, like, very, very often, a lot of the support is on their side, which to me is a bit odd. It's like, if the public support is on their side, or even if some of it is on their side, or half of it, whatever percent, I don't know, whatever percentage it may be, you're basically saying that you do not trust the major chess websites with their banning practices. In which case, you can no longer trust anything in terms of the results. Like, if the people who they ban as cheaters aren't cheaters, and then most likely, either there's no cheating, which would be humanly very unlikely because people do tend to try to take advantage, right? In anything. In poker, people try to take advantage if they can. Any sort of betting games, in any sports, you will see a history of like trying to take performance enhancing drugs.
Always.
Across the board.
Lance Armstrong.
So yeah. Unless chess players are just absolutely pristine and special, then we should assume there is a percentage of attempt cheating. So either chess.com can't catch the cheat, like they catch cheaters incorrectly. It's all false positives, which would also mean that the people they're not catching are cheaters, which means that everything's wrong and you can't trust any results anymore. Or you should trust them. Like, you should either put your trust in them, at least that the people they ban are, in the vast majority of cases, that is a correct.
Chess players catch. Are not special. No. Chess players are not special.
I mean, obviously, like, chess players are just normal people. Like, we're probably just as likely to cheat as cyclists are to. Actually, maybe not, because the cyclists were completely, like, all of them were taking.
It was kind of assumed that you're supposed to be cheating if you want to stay at the top.
You know, I don't think it's that bad. I mean, I know it's not that bad because I'm not cheating.
Or but, are you?
You know, it's funny. The Title Tuesday, like, yearly stats got released, and it has all, like, the most random stats ever. Like, who has the highest drawing percentage, who has the highest win percentage of white. And I didn't even check it. I just got told this by someone else, like, some of the numbers. And I realized that my statistics are exceptional only in the way that they are the most unexceptional. There is nothing exceptional in them. I would win the award for most unexceptional statistics. Like, the only list I really appear on is, like, I'm ninth highest in winning rate with white pieces, something like that. Like, I'm not even top five in anything.
You don't very often make it to Kramnik's videos. At least not at the top of the standings.
Yeah, it's
a bit sad.
It's a bit sad, yeah. I have to say, because I kind of was hoping that I would be suspicious at least at times. Like, that's usually a good sign. You know, like, Magnus is always going to be at the top of a number of these lists, and so is Hikaru, and Ali Reza will show up here and there, and so on. There were some fun statistics as well, like highest drawing. I actually when I was asked to guess who had the highest draws, I like had a number of very good guesses. Because I feel like I follow a lot of these Title Tuesdays and I have an idea of like who plays super solid and who plays not solid at all, and so on and so forth. Anyway, we're kind of straying.
We're digressing, but to keep things a bit more positive, or put it in a more positive light and show that, you know, chess players are not only not special, but we're not even the worst. I don't know if you've seen this story from Chinese Chess. I think it's called Shanqi or something like that, where 41 players, like basically the best players in the world, were punished for accepting bribes, match fixing, and cheating. I think half of the GMs on this list were completely banned and stripped of their titles. And basically the equivalent of yourself and Magnus, the top two players, got lifetime bans and their titles stripped. So it can be worse. It can be much worse.
Yeah, it's funny because I did see this, and a few things that struck me. One was that the guy who had been the best Chinese chess player for like a very, very long time, in all his accumulated like match fixing, I think the amount that he earned was $110,000.
Sad.
Which, like, if let's say one of the top players in chess was caught cheating, probably they would be doing it to earn in the several millions, not 110,000 over years. Like, this has been going on for a long time. The other funny thing was that this guy had like had signed up to a tournament with a fake name. And then I showed this in the characters in Mandarin to Grigori, who studied Chinese. And it was basically like if Magnus had showed up to an event and like the intonation in his name was different. And he said, like, I'm not Magnus Carlsen, I'm Magnus Carlson. And then everyone was like, yeah, that's great.
Welcome to the tournament.
Welcome. No, it was... And I was just thinking, like, what is this scene that they don't recognize the best player in the world by face?
That's actually
I don't
hilarious.
Know. I didn't, like, look up too much in the story, but it did seem very comical in some ways.
Yeah. Well, Fabi, I think that's a good way to top it off, to finish this episode. I don't want to hold you for too long because, obviously, it's pretty late in the Netherlands. You have a game, not tomorrow, but after tomorrow, so still plenty of time to rest. But a big, long, tedious event coming. And I might even be doing occasional live streaming of your games. So, guys, keep up with that. Keep an eye out for that. And hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I certainly did. And yeah, I cannot wait for the Wimbledon of chess to begin. And yeah, see who comes out on top. Fabi, cheers. Enjoy Vikingsday. Enjoy the beautiful weather. And I will speak with you soon. Cheers.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.